SpongeBob SquarePants is going to take a bit of a breather today. Nickelodeon, the entertainment TV network for children, is going dark for 3 hours this afternoon, along with its website. The network wants to encourage children to log off, tune out, and just play. They're calling it the Worldwide Day of Play. For some expert insight, we're joined again by kid reporter Brennan LaBrie, founder and publisher of the Spruce Street Weekly in Port Townsend, Washington. Brennan, good to have you back.
Nice talking to you.
By the way, you are definitely back by popular demand. We had you on our show a few weeks ago when you were to be a reporter in the magazine Time for Kids and such an audience favorite. We look for chances to bring you back. So nice to join you again.
Mm-hmm.
You going to participate?
Yes, I am. And it's a really beautiful fall over here. So playing outside is going to be a lot of fun.
Now, I understand you did some reporting for us about what some of your friends are also going to be doing.
Yes, and I also interviewed a few elementary age classes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were gasping at first. What? Because they didn't know about it. But then I just mentioned play outside, and they were all for it.
Oh, good, good. So what are some of your friends doing? Just playing outside generally?
Yes, there were a lot of bike riders in the group.
Mm-hmm.
And one boy was perfectly fine with going out and playing his Game Boy.
Playing with his Game Boy?
Yeah.
Does that count?
I don't know.
Doesn't quite fit the spirit.
Doesn't quite fit, yeah, what Nickelodeon wants.
Yeah. I'm told you don't even have a television at home, right?
No, but I love to get like a collection of SpongeBob or something
mm-hmm.
and watch it on a rainy day with some hot chocolate.
I guarantee you, I've watched SpongeBob a few times with our six-year-old, and I just don't get it. He's a sponge, right?
Right. It's just nonsense.
Okay, well,
there's something so when just tired of all this stuff in the world, you can just lie back to see a world of innocence and fun.
Thank you, Brennan. That's good to know. I think we could all stand that from time to time. Now, last time we spoke with you, you were among the finalists to be a reporter for Time for Kids. How did that work out?
It's been going pretty good, and Time for Kids is getting some good assignments for me.
Can you share with us some of the story ideas, or is that exclusive to the Spruce Street Weekly in Time?
Hmm. Right now, I'm coming up with ideas, and the Winter Olympics is a possibility.
Yeah, Winter Olympics are in Vancouver, right?
Right. It's right across the sound,
mm-hmm.
and I'm always ready for an assignment.
Brennan, to cover the Winter Olympics at your age, would that be wonderful, huh?
That's going to be one of the high points in my life.
Oh, my gosh.
That is going to be so exciting.
Well, Brennan, I hope that all works out. May I ask again, how old are you?
I just turned 10 a few days ago.
Seriously, you're 10 years old?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I bet you get that a lot, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Brennan LaBrie, awfully nice talking to you again.
Nice talking to you, too.
Brennan LaBrie, who joined us on the phone from his home in Washington State, where he is editor, publisher, founder of the Spruce Street Weekly. Happy day of play, Brennan.
Yes.
Take care. Talk to you again, I hope.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, kids, play. You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.
You may not know the name Aziz Ansari, but you've probably laughed at him or with him. He's a stand-up comedian and actor who's appeared on some of TV's funniest shows, Scrubs, Reno 911, Flight of the Conchords, and also on the big screen in Judd Apatow's latest movie, Funny People. Now, Aziz Ansari has a steady day job. He plays Tom Haverford, public servant, on the NBC sitcom Parks and Recreation. It's a mockumentary created by the people who brought The Office to America. And in this scene, Tom is talking to his colleague, played by the star of the show, Saturday Night Live veteran Amy Poehler.
You're not from here, right?
No, I'm from South Carolina.
But you moved to South Carolina from where?
My mother's uterus.
But you were conceived in Libya, right?
Wow, no. I was conceived in America. My parents are Indian.
Where did the name Haverford come from?
My birth name is Darwish Zabir Ishmael Ghani. Then I changed it to Tom Haverford because, you know, brown guys with funny sounding Muslim names don't make it really far in politics.
Aziz Ansari, welcome to All Things Considered.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So did you actually make up a lot of that, make up that character?
I am really from South Carolina. That's my cousin's name, Darwish Ghani, and so I just did that so he would get teased at school.
Your cousin, Darwish?
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's get back to you and your character. You play a character, Tom Haverford, on Parks and Recreation.
Yes.
Who, well, describe him for us.
Amy Poehler plays Leslie Knope, who's the deputy director of the Parks and Recreation Department, and Tom is basically her right-hand man, basically like an administrative assistant. So, you know, my character, I think, is a little bit savvier, and yeah, I'm just usually with her for all these hijinks that we go through in the show.
And you're kind of, well, you're kind of a jerk.
Yeah, I'm really sleazy. I hit on women a lot. It's a fun attitude to play. It's always fun to play a dude who's kind of a sleazebag.
And then in that clip we just heard, she thinks that you're from Libya. I mean, do you play off the ethnic humor a lot?
No, not really. I think it's a point of pride for the show that my character could be played by a white guy, but they ended up hiring me.
So tell me a little bit about how you got this role and what you want to make out of it.
I just finished 2 seasons of this sketch comedy show I did on MTV called Human Giant. Greg Daniels and Mike Schur, the guys who created this show, knew who I was from that show. They met with me and basically said, you know, we're working on this new show. It's going to be like The Office, documentary style. We're not really sure what it's going to be, and we'd like you to be a part of it. As far as my goal, I was just thinking about this, is to eventually, like after a few seasons, for some reason get fired and then have to be replaced by another Indian guy with a beard. Like, do you remember, like, on sitcoms, every now and then, like, it'd be like the next season, then there'd be like, what happened to the mom? It's that's a different actor.
But I just want
that.
Similar,
it hasn't happened in a while, and I want that to happen. I want to be replaced by another Indian guy that looks kind of like me.
Have you ever worked in an office situation like that?
The only similar job I had was I worked for NYU Heating, Ventilation, and Air Conditioning. I guess that's the closest thing I've had to a Parks and Recreation job, which is not very close at all.
Was this when you were a student?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's really my passion. I'm going to try to save up some money from acting and then go back to working at NYU Heating, Ventilation, and Air Conditioning. Parks and Recreation is kind of like temping, so I can get back to my real love. When you walk through the Bopes Library and you feel that cool air, you know, there's a sense of pride, you know? It's like, I did that. I'm the reason why people aren't sweating.
You were in school. You weren't studying comedy. I mean, I don't think you can get a degree at NYU.
No,
were you studying?
I went to business school thinking, oh, that'll be like a bunch of laid-back kids who aren't sure what they want to do, like me. And instead, it was like really intense kids that were like very focused on finance and, you know, I got to work at Goldman Sachs, you know, et cetera. And I was doing stand-up the whole time while I was in school. And like, you know, by like my second or third year of doing stand-up, I was like, well, I feel like I could at least make a career out of just touring as a stand-up. So I did that, and I just, you know, finished my marketing. I didn't drop out of school or anything. Just didn't want to do that. I didn't feel like it was necessary.
So you have a degree in marketing from NYU.
I do.
You've also been in feature films.
Sure,
Most recently, Funny People.
I was in Funny People.
Judd Apatow's movie.
Judd's movie. It was very fun.
And you played Randy.
I played a very obnoxious, loud, silly comedian named Randy, who was basically, a lot of people thought it was like, oh, this is a take on Dane Cook or whoever, and it was more the notion of like, what if Soulja Boy was a stand-up comedian instead of a rapper? I don't know if the NPR audience is hip to Soulja Boy. Soulja Boy is on Fresh Air this week, right?
Right.
He hosts Fresh Air, doesn't he? Soulja Boy, tell
him. He fills in for Terry.
Terry does odd weeks, Soulja Boy even weeks. That should be the news segment. All right, now it's time for our news segment. Let's see what's going on in the Middle East. Soulja Boy, tell him. Then Soulja Boy breaks it down.
Aziz Ansari, thank you very much.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It was so fun.
You can watch comedian Aziz Ansari tonight on NBC sitcom Parks and Recreation.
A new development in the law of unintended consequences. Car companies have tried to make gas-powered cars drive more quietly, and a lot of them do now. But there are also worries that some of the new car models are so quiet they could actually be dangerous. Nissan and General Motors will release battery-powered cars next year that make almost no noise, But technological achievement often comes with an uncontemplated cost. The Washington Post reports this week that the federal government is concerned about the practical effect of all that silence on the roads. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration worries that cyclists and pedestrians, especially people who are visually impaired, could be at risk. They've been trained to rely on the sounds of approaching traffic to tell them when it's safe to cross a street. So some manufacturers are searching for new ways to put sound into their vehicle for safety's sake. Nissan is testing out chimes or whistling melodies, but, you know, sounds are what we do for a living. Why not alert pedestrians with this sound? That ought to keep people out of the crosswalks.
Forget the G20 this week. The real meeting of rival superpowers was in Bavaria, Germany today. That's where a soccer match took place featuring players wearing rival footwear, Adidas and Puma, players who work at those rival companies. The game is remarkable because of a long-standing bitter feud between the iconic sneaker makers. It goes back to Germany in the 1940s when shoemaking brothers Adolf and Rudolf Dassler had a falling out. One founded Adidas, the other Puma. Barbara Smith, author of the book Sneaker Wars, explains how the rivalry got started.
Well, that joint company worked pretty well for some time, but it became apparent fairly quickly that they had very different personalities. Adolf was really the cobbler. He was a rather quiet man, whereas Rudolf was a more outspoken, typical sales type person, if you like, cigar chomping. Basically, the tensions arose over the years, but it really came to a boiling point during the war when Rudolf Dassler was sent to the front in what is today Poland, and after his return was picked up by American soldiers. And so he was imprisoned for about a year in Germany. And of course, he was fairly convinced that this came from his brother's side and the will to have him evicted from the company.
Could you argue, though, that this rivalry actually turned these companies into multinational success stories and transformed the sneaker business, or actually created a sneaker business?
Well, I mean, certainly if you were an athlete in the 60s or the 70s, it was pretty easy because all you had to do is go to Herzog and, you know, cross the river a couple of times and up the stakes. And that's quite a few people did. The rivalry did contribute to shape, sports marketing, really.
This rivalry took place in a small town in Bavaria. How did it manifest itself in this small town where the brothers grew up?
Well, for several decades, the town really was split in two. People really had to take sides. They were either Adidas or Puma, and in fact, Herzog, as it's known in short, became known as the town of the bent necks, because you always look at people's shoes before and see what they were wearing before you strike up a conversation. You actually had Adidas bakers, Puma bakers, and people from one side would preferably go to that school and not to the other school. And the town was totally divided for quite a while.
So today's soccer match will do what for the two companies?
I don't think it will change very much between the two companies because the business rivalry, of course, remains totally intact. Then again, on a personal level, I mean, I did receive personal messages from various people. It all seems pretty good-humored. And for some of them, yeah, it probably will be the first time that they actually are in contact with people from the other side at a personal or sports kind of level.
Barbara Smith is the author of the book Sneaker Wars, The Enemy Brothers Who Founded Adidas and Puma and the Family That Forever Changed the Business of Sport. Thank you.
You're welcome.
My Adidas walk through cops and doors and roam all over Coliseum floors.
Well, we know what side Run-DMC is on. The winner of today's soccer game, it was management. Adidas and Puma employees played on mixed teams. The team that had both CEOs on it, that team won.
While we're on the subject of sneakers, we'd like to hear your sneaker story. Send us a photo of you and your favorite sneakers and tell us why you love them, whatever the brand. Were you wearing them when you met your significant other or when you ran in the Boston Marathon? Send us your sneaker story with photo attached to sneakers@npr.org, and we'll put the best stories on our website.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.